This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is the New Blue Review. We have in studio with us Ilan Ossendriver. Ilan, how are you doing? Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on. Always good to be here sitting next to you. Always.
Well, at least most of the time. Ilan, you've put this new book in, and I do remember talking to you. I think we may even have discussed it on air at some point that you were doing this. You've covered a lot of very difficult stuff in your time. I mean, you did a bit of anti-apartheid work at some point. You've walked around after Israeli prime ministers, figuring out what they're doing. But this is a much more personal book in some respects, I get the sense.
So this book, in a way, has been very therapeutical for me because of what I've done as a photojournalist in Israel. I have covered suicide bombings. I've covered many different parts of Israeli society. And you know, I always thought whenever I'm doing a story, this is the ultimate of the story. For example, you know, the night I was with Yitzhak Rabin at Kikar Malchai Yisrael when he was having a rally for peace. And that was supposed to be the most amazing evening to show that we wanted peace in the region. And eventually, the picture that I was supposed to take for the Jerusalem Post that was supposed to be the crowd became the second page, and the assassination of Rabin became the first one. And I thought, on the front page, and I thought Israel could not go any lower than this in terms of feeling, in terms of horrific experience. And I've covered, you know, the suicide bombings and seen buses blown up and everything, and I always thought that was the limit. But what happened on October 7th literally changed everything, because we saw a modern day pogrom that we had learned about as children, as you know, from our parents about what happened in Eastern Europe, and this is what happened. And so October 7th really literally changed our lives as Jewish people around the world, and we can see it every day from across the world. You see it in Canada, you see it in Australia, and all these so-called Western societies showing, you know, treating us with such anti-Semitism. But a couple of weeks after October 7th, my wife Corinne says to me, "You are going to Israel. What are you waiting around for? What are you doing here? Go." And I realized I needed to go and document what had happened, because eventually all these images will kind of like fade out. So I went straight to Israel, and I started documenting on the kibbutzim, and I was going across the country, just covering everything that people were doing. And it showed what was supposed to be such a divided country that was actually thrust into an absolute unity. You know, they talk about the young people of Israel saying, they're not interested in the army, they are TikTok generation and this, and they turned out to be the first people lining up to go defend Israel. And it showed everything from the Druze community, the Arab community, the Christian community, everybody coming together as one. Not as other people say it isn't. It was as one. And it was an eye-opener. And the whole time I was there, you're on such an emotional high and adrenaline, because it's something so unusual to go to, you know, the hostage square and meet the families of hostages. And then I started going down to the kibbutzim. And the time I went, there was absolutely nobody around. I was driving by myself on these roads and documenting it, and getting down to the kibbutzim was kind of like a harrowing experience, because you'd like think about every tree along the way, who's hiding behind it, who's there. And anyway, I got to the first kibbutz I went to, was Kibbutz Kfar Aza. And if any of you have ever been on a kibbutz, it's the most pastoral, it's the most quiet, relaxed environment you can get. And there I'm walking with all these journalists from around the world with the artillery shells in the background. And as we get to the one part of Kibbutz Kfar Aza where you turn around and you see the devastation, it's like someone takes a sledgehammer and hits you in the face to see it. And you just cannot believe that people, you know, did such things and with such brutality. And it really shook me. And, you know, you see the Zaka people that do the incredible work going around looking for body parts of what's left. And you see, and it's all quiet when they're doing it, in this devastation, and you know that there are souls hanging around, and you know that nothing, there's still the sense of the death even afterwards, and it's just there lingering in the streets, in the rooms. And you find out that the Hamas used a kind of a grenade that explodes at 3,000 degrees and incinerates everything. And so my book actually is divided into a few sections. It's divided into images of the kibbutzim. And then I started studying textures on walls. And then I started seeing faces in walls. And that was, for me, unbelievable. I had sleepless nights about it. I was in Kibbutz Be'eri, where nobody was going back again because people, they didn't want anybody to go back. They just wanted to kind of like preserve the sanctity. But anyway, I managed to get on and I started documenting. And I was with one of the kibbutzniks and I said to him, look in the wall then. And I'm saying it in Hebrew, of course. And we see the shadow of a human being, and that's one of the pictures on my front cover of a burn mark that turned out to be like a human body implanted into the wall. And then I started noticing bullet marks making the shapes of faces and eyes and mouths, and I kept seeing this. And when this guy from Kibbutz Be'eri said, I can't take this anymore and I need to leave, and it was very hard to look at how I saw these walls after the devastation of the kibbutzim. I also went across the country documenting artists and street artists, because I know I love street art, and I wanted to capture what they were doing, because I know that, you know, street art, these eventually come down, they get painted over. And I captured some of the most unbelievable images of explaining the unity of the people and what went wrong on October 7th with the women soldiers, you know, and we're going to get into that. But also the different, you know, bring them homes all over the country and done incredible art and that expression, you know. During the apartheid era when I used to photograph, we had the political art, which was, you know, down with Afrikaans and down with the apartheid regime. And then our democracy came along. Then we started seeing art that was creative about showing the country creatively. And so this year in Israel was showing, from some of the most incredible street artists, showing the feelings of the day, from the Nova Festival art, and just depicting Israel through art and from every little town across the country. Then you saw that every single, almost all shops had like a sign, we'll survive, we will win, bring them home. And it was incredible to document this. And that's what I did with this book. I felt it was very important to do this book. I don't think there are that many books out there at the moment. There are one that's, you know, there are a few, but not, I don't think as like mine, which is a full-on photographic book of what I covered in Israel from all aspects of life.
So, Ilan, we actually have a message in here from a listener. So thank you. Listener doesn't seem to have your name here, but if you do want to message 0618951019, and we'll take your message. I think that they're referring to this imprint that you're talking about of people on the walls, and asking, was this a phenomenon that was seen in Japan after the dropping of the atomic bomb there? Sort of thing.
So I can't really answer that because I'd never known that before, and I just saw what I saw as a photographer. And as I see things, you know, I always look at things very closely, and I started noticing this, and then it became very evident for me. And I don't know, I've heard about it, but never seen it in Japan. I heard about it, but this was so blatant, and you see it in my book.
You can see it, actually, as you say, on the front cover, if you're just looking at the book. Initially, it just looks like a wall that has been burnt, but when you actually have a look, it is a much more disturbing image.
That
message comes in from Carol Zimmerman. Thank you. We're talking to Ilan Ossendriver today about his trips to Israel to create this new book called Israel After October 7th. And we're doing it on the New Blue Review on 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 Chai FM. I'm talking today to Ilan Ossendriver about his new book, Israel After October 7th. Now, Ilan, it's interesting. I was talking to a friend of mine in Israel the other day, and he said that there's a WhatsApp group that they've started to make haiku poetry. And the only rule for the haiku poetry is that it first has to be a haiku, so it fits this particular Japanese style. And also that you have to compose the haiku whilst you're in a bomb shelter
waiting for the missile to fly over. So you've got about 10 minutes to compose the haiku. And it's interesting for me because it's a kind of art response to what we're seeing. And I said to him, he should make his own poetry book out of all these haikus. But what do you think the role is here of art in all of this? Because we've seen an activism version of it. You've spoken about the therapeutic. You've spoken about the documentary. I mean, do you think that from the documentary, I mean, we've seen so much of it. Even the attacks were live televised and whatever. Is the documentary element something which needs to be created, or is it more needs to be organized and so people can engage with it?
So there are two levels. The organization is that you can organize artists to create images depicting the day. But what I loved about Israel, that the artists came out themselves expressing themselves and their feelings of the day. And it's almost like a historical document, but painted on walls. And so I thought that was important to document, because some of these images are really kind of like explaining, you know, the day, you know, and also the love between, you know, an Israeli young girl and a soldier, but also that, you know, there's a lot of words like this will pass over, and so all these elements we're creating a sense of how society is feeling. But through art, and it's important, because if you look at, you know, not so much in America, but artists really are the forefront of expression of the day, and you see it, you see it in Israel a lot, and you see it not so much here anymore. Here, the art is the expression of the day, of just pure art, as opposed to political art. This is political, but also done in Israel, depicting the day, but not political in the sense of being who do you vote for, who do you do. It's just showing you what is happening and who we are as a human being, as Israel, you know, to be with us, bring them home, this will never last forever, let's be strong, and showing the images.
In order to produce this book, you didn't just do it in one fell swoop. You actually went back a few times in order to produce it.
Yeah.
What was that time span? And what was the difference that you perhaps started to see as you went back and forth across those times?
Yeah, so when I first went, a few weeks after it happened, everything was absolutely fresh. Nothing had been changed. Nothing had been cleaned up. Nothing had been moved. Everything was as is. And that was harrowing to see. And of course, as time, for example, on the Nova Festival at the Riem Forest, when I got there, there were like the pictures of the people killed, the music goers killed. They were on these like stilts, you know, and they were there, and it was just very raw and it was very emotional. But as time going, things started to progress and to keep it more maybe bureaucratic in a way, sterilize it, fix it up, make it look like a proper memorial, a proper place to visit. So it's still very impactful, but I got the essence of it at its rawness, when it was just starting and nobody understood what to do. And as I watched on the four times I went to Israel, it started to kind of like get cleaned up and made it more an official, like an official park or, you know, official
a
place
memorial,
to go.
A memorial.
Yeah, for example, at the car graveyard, when I got there, all the cars were just piled up, or not even piled up, just in the area. And now there's a memorial there. So things have changed.
Were you ever doing this under fire, so to speak? I mean, was there still guys running around or rockets going over?
So what is very interesting is that when I first went down, a lot of the Hamas weaponry and some of them were just, you know, lying in the streets. So what happened was that I saw this one road where there were Israeli flags flying, and I thought I'd get a nice picture with the army vehicle coming by. And somebody stopped me and says, look down at the bottom there. And I looked down, and there I saw like bulletproof jackets of Hamas and bullets, live bullets still lying there and all kinds of everything. And I started taking photos. Then I realized, that's quite scary, because this could be booby-trapped, for all I know. Or maybe there's still a terrorist hiding in that area. I had no idea. That's how I felt when I was driving. And then I also went up to the Lebanese border, and all my history of photojournalism, this is the only time I ever got petrified. I was driving and I was alone, And I suddenly had the feeling that I was being watched from Lebanon. And I really got into kind of like a panic attack. And with my car, I started driving and zigzagging across the road so that if they were going to fire an RPG at me, they would miss. And that's the only time I've actually really, really been scared. And, I've been, in the West Bank and everything. But this was like, I knew they were watching me. And they probably laughed. They look at him, let's leave this guy alone. He knows. But that was really scary. And, I've been caught in the rockets coming from Gaza, the air raid sirens. And this is not the first time for me. I covered the Gulf War in 1991. And I remember the Scud missiles coming into Tel Aviv from Iraq. And so I've built a kind of like an immunity to it, but you can't be immune to it because, they're trying to kill you. And so you're very wary about how you do the photography, where are you safe and you stand against the wall when the rockets come in, but still film. And
If you want to ask any questions, Ilan Ossendriver, 061-895-1019. Ilan, I'm interested in the format of the book. You've done it as a coffee table book, but a coffee table book is normally something that's like animals or cool buildings somewhere around the world, right? That's how people often. I mean, this is like very dark stuff. Do you expect people to have this in their living room?
That's a good question. I hope everybody has in their living room. I've had to do another reorder because so many people want this book. It's a book that I never wanted to do. Nobody ever wanted to do a book like this. It's like nobody wanted to ever do a book on the Holocaust. But this book is a documentation. It's a historical documentation done with images. And so I didn't want to use small images. I wanted them to be impactful because one day you're going to have to show other children. You're going to have the children. So it's a document. And so I used a 300 by 300 format. There's about 160 pages in the book, right about that. And the pictures are, and I've worked on the pictures in different sizes, standard size and a full page and spreads to show the depth of what happened. It's meant to make you aware of what happened on the day. And it's not meant to shock you because I haven't got anything bloody I haven't photographed any of that, but I've seen the images of the brutality of what happened. But that book's not about it. It's just showing you what happened on the day on the kibbutzim and how I saw textures on walls and I saw faces and the street art and the artists and life in Israel. And that's what I wanted to show with this book. It's a documentation of life in Israel, from flags on beaches to shop windows to people protesting to people putting on tzitzit, which is I have a very powerful image in there, but across the board of Israel society. And so it's an important document. It can be a coffee table book that you look at and say, we got to remember who we are as Jews. This was attacked not because of Palestine, got nothing to do with this. This is absolutely pure hatred against Jews. And you see it manifesting it across the whole of the world.
And what has it been the reaction so far to the book?
It's actually been quite unbelievable. I have people ordering 10 at a time, 8 at a time to give us people as gifts. They say it's a remarkable piece of work. I don't like to say that, but this is you ask me what people are thinking. And I've sold a lot already, and that's why I'm going for reorder. And I want this book to be in Jewish homes and also non-Jewish homes around the world to realize what had happened today and why we are at war, because we are at war for the future of the Jewish people. And actually, as everybody also understands, the future of the West. We have such a weak West today, in America and Canada and Australia. These are the countries that should be like really behind Israel, but we see that they're not there. And these societies are also breaking down drastically. When a woman in Finland with a hijab shouts, "Hey, there's too many Finnish people in Finland," this is the kind of statements you get. And this woman in Canada shouting, "The final solution." And these are words, but these are powerful words that create violence against us. Look what happened to the rabbi so sadly in the UAE. like, you know, this is things that are happening, and so we got to be aware of our surroundings, and we got to be strong, and we got to be very powerful to fight this evil. And you know, we are believers, and we are always in the front of it. And we know this is what our life on earth is. We're Jewish people, and we got to fight it and be strong. But my book is to show you why you should be strong, because this is what happened to us. But people that out of pure hate for us.
Now you are doing some book launches around this. I mean, I'm sure you'll get to Israel at some point to also launch it there. But you're doing it here as well. When are those coming up?
So I got a launch tomorrow. I can't tell you where it is, but if you find out, you can ask me. It's should be around about 5:30 tomorrow for 6, and you can come to the launch.
So how can people get more details on it if they want?
So they can either speak to you or speak to me. And we can tell them if they want to order books. I'm actually in the process of finishing a website where they can get the I don't even know the domain yet, but I'm working on it today. And I will be available. And also Kollel Bookstore downstairs. You know, you can get the book at the Kollel Bookstore. But go. I've seen there's only 3 left. So you better rush.
I'm just looking here for the details here. Because I think there is an email. Because no one wants to talk to me, let's be honest. It's bad enough they have to listen to me.
I like listening to you.
Well, I'm glad somebody does. All right, so look, while I find these details, something that you often find with photojournalists, I mean, you call this therapeutic. Some people might say it's traumatic. I mean,
traumatic via the therapy. Look, the book hits you on all emotions. You know, it kind of like wakes you up to see what happened to us.
Right. So, but what I'm asking is from your perspective, like, how have you dealt with having to put this together?
It was a very emotional process because you kept looking at the images, and I tried to not sanitize my thoughts because then it just becomes another photo essay. This is close to our heart. You know, I lived in Israel for 20 years. My daughter lives there. And so it's very important for me to, when I work on this book, not to be blasé, even though you're turning pages and doing things and layouts and everything. And then you have to sit back and look at your book and say, okay, this is what I've done. So it's been very emotional. But I'm glad I've done it because if I'd not had done it, it would have been very... you know, just thinking I would have kicked myself not to do it because it was a book that I needed to do.
And it sounded like your wife needed to kick you out the house in order for you to do it as well. Very important.
Yeah. Very important. She was amazing. She was amazing, Corinne, with the editing.
So, okay. So, Sefi Cohen asks, what is the name of the book? So, the book is called Israel After Israel After 7th October through the lens of Ilan Ossendriver. The launch is 5:30 for 6 p.m. and you can RSVP if you want to attend. It is Tony, T-O-N-I, at sazf.org. That's Tony, T-O-N-I, at sazf.org. And you can get information about the launch and where to... And where to see Ilan. He'll be talking, I'm sure, about the pictures and about taking those photos of what happened on October 7th. Very powerful and not in your face. Some of it is actually quite metaphorical when you start getting into it. So, Ilan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Good luck with the book, and let us know how it goes. And hopefully we can have you on for... More pleasant things.
Absolutely.
Next time.
And if anybody wants me to come give a talk about the book at their shuls, I'm available. And
And they can just go to your website, Ilan Ossendriver.
Or they can find out where I am. I work a lot with the Jewish Report, so they can get hold of me. And thank you so much for allowing me to share my book with you.
There we go. Ilan Ossendriver, thank you so much. This is 101.9 Chai FM.